Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting from New Zealand, the beautiful little island-chained paradise with the Fukushima sun that gives everybody a part-time job as an incandescent light bulb which helps the economy, according to the Prime Minister who used to work for the Federal Reserve for 2 years. Of course, he would say that, wouldn't he? Especially when the country is now in more debt than it ever has been. Hey, wait a second. Isn't that the exact same thing that happened to the United States after Obama, who was incidentally a member of a blue party that got elected on 2008 by a platform of change, who was financed by bankers, $500 million or so, and then they implode the economy and get it into more debt than it's ever been? In fact, he loaned more money in his first term of presidency than all previous presidents of the United States combined! Which is exactly the same thing that the Prime Minister of New Zealand, John Key, used to work for the Federal Reserve did. Combined! Does anybody else see a connection here? Does anybody else see these NATO trade deals and TPPAs and all of these other international agreements that are basically eroding every single nation's sovereignty? Have you ever thought that perhaps it might be a good idea once in a while to listen to voices from outside the normal mainstream spectrum where almost everything they tell you is the opposite of the truth? Don't you think so? Then please, ladies and gentlemen, go to thevinnieeastwoodshow.com and subscribe to give a monthly donation to this broadcast. All bills get paid, we interview people every single day and make sure that their voices come out to you unfettered so that they can actually express themselves. Because I found, just like when you're partying, you find the best parts of any party that you've ever been to have not been the music, nor the booze. It's actually been those really contemplative conversations that you have with honest and intelligent people who feel comfortable to express themselves and listen to you express yourself reciprocally. Isn't it? Those are the best kind of parties, and that's what we do here on this show. There's only one rule, other than the FCC regulations perhaps, and that's to have fun, ladies and gentlemen. If we're having fun, we hope you're having fun too. So, without further ado, or as the Israelis say, without further ado, my very special guest today is Jerry Avalos. His websites are thehollowtree.com. That's the hollow, H-O-L-O, like a hologram, tree.com. And his other website involving the manufacturers, I believe, is IntrinsicEnergyInnovations.com. That's IntrinsicEnergyInnovations.com. Innovation, sorry. Now, you may recall, I think probably the start of 2014, I interviewed a couple of guys by the name of Thunder and Brad, the Thunder and Light team, who have a number of hologram products that they claim do all sorts of amazing things. And Jerry is of a similar field of research, and he hasn't listened to that interview, so we'll we'll have to forgive both of our mutual ignorance here and just get along like normal people, I guess. Jerry Avalos, welcome to the program.
Yeah, thanks, Vinny, for having me on. It's a real pleasure, and I've haven't had a chance to get on the air in a little bit, so it's refreshing.
Yeah, you're welcome. Would you be able to elucidate just a little bit about who you are, what you do, and the background of this hologram technology that a whole bunch of people are talking about?
Yeah, sure, no problem. My background actually it seemed kind of mundane and kind of weird at the same time. For all rights and purposes, I've just been here in Southern California all my life. I've always been a creative person, went to school for art and illustration. Shortly out of school, I got into fabrication with plastics and resin and prototyping of different products for the movie replica industry and model industry. And that's where I learned a lot about materials and hard engineering in a sense without necessarily having to go to school. But I've always have been intrigued with cutting-edge physics and psychology and where they merge. Myself, I was born a natural lucid dreamer, which actually bridges into intuitive applications, you can say. And so as I progressed on my path of knowledge and truth-seeking, as I'm sure you can relate to, Vinny, I also have done my stint as a internet radio host at different times. And so I just saw a lot of different fringe science and how it kind of comes together with all the different disciplines that I mentioned which inevitably got me here. So we're now doing something similar, as you mentioned, as the other company there, where we're using a type of radionic device, scalar device, with, as well as a couple of other applications relating to wave imprintation to do some fun stuff. And I guess it does kind of fall under, as far as we understand, the quantum mechanic heading, I guess you can say. And we actually do have long conversations, my associates and I, one being Jim Stewart, a Yale-trained physicist, then another one being Matt Pulver, who's a double bachelor from UCLA in math and physics, who works with Dr. Paul LaViolette. So we have like really, really involved science discussions about this, and it's pretty interesting stuff because while we know how certain things work, we're not claiming to know all the answers because it's just, it's very fascinating. So I guess you could say that's like a quick synopsis and a glib kind of way of my background and how I got to this.
Do we have somewhat of a layman's terms version for these hologram things that are, what are they? Imprinting scalar waves, right? Perhaps, ladies and gentlemen, imagine for a moment that everything in the entire universe, everything that's physical and exists in the 3D realm, is basically only there because there's certain frequencies, certain vibrations and what have you that actually make them appear solid and visible. Imagine for a moment that you had the ability to manipulate those frequencies. You had the ability to charge out a frequency of your own that would actually change the physical world around you. Imagine you could change heat, weather, cold, that kind of thing, and transmute them and make them different. Is that sort of what we're talking about here?
In a sense, it's once again, it's kind of difficult to put to exact terms, but it definitely has to do with frequency form, wave form, and as it relates to information. This is some of the things, really the, where we're at in the research right now, we're looking at things like the modern academic understanding of gravity waves and seeing how this potentially works into what we're doing because we're seeing a lot of correlations with what we call relative density. And this kind of works in, it's a fancy way to kind of say what a lot of people, I'm sure, in your audience are familiar with things like organite or even composite materials on aircrafts. You have a structure or a specific structure or coherence of varying materials that are conductive and non-conductive. And so that's, in a sense, what happens even on a small scale with the hologram. You have this sort of binary on-off that can be altered in a sense that there is information that's somehow entangled with these materials a little easier. I guess that's kind of what I would say is the most basic way to put it in terms of what we've been observing, but we're not saying for sure that's just how it's done. It's just, this is what we've been able to see and replicate.
I saw a presentation done by, Dr. Ken something, Ken Robertson, I think, yeah. Sir Ken Robinson, actually. And he was talking about education and how it relates, and essentially what education system is doing is trying to extinguish creativity and experimentation and what have you, because they're just trying to turn you into an industrialized slave kind of thing. And important thinkers and inventors usually don't go through those systems to a large degree, and if they do, it holds them back tremendously. So wondering what... In your educational background, what part has this had to play in ensuring that these devices work and that these ideas, are sound and technically viable?
Well, it's kind of funny. That's a good question. I usually don't get asked that. It's awesome. I would say in my actual structured education, design concepts was a huge thing for me. Going through college as a illustrator, and also taking being in the university, because I actually went to both like a junior college and a university, but I never graduated. Ironically enough, it's kind of funny. I have enough units, or I had enough units at one point for 2 degrees, but had absolutely none. But one of the things I found to be most useful is the design concept and understanding how to work with certain materials on a practical level, not beyond theoretical. Like, a lot of people are familiar with computer graphics, but it's knowing the difference of what happens when you go from the computer screen to a physical print, and it actually kind of turns mathematic. And so that helped a lot. And then, ironically enough, like high school physics, because a lot of the physics stuff never changed. You know, a lot of the theorems are all the same, the equations are all the same. You know, so looking at those and remembering them, because I did enjoy my physics class in high school, and I did well, and so that stuck with me. And so I did apply it for quite a while, practically. And I think it's a great course, physics. And I'm forgetting one there. Oh, another one, school-wise. But yeah, I would probably say those are the two major ones, honestly, because those, being able to meld this physical reality with sort of that imaginative reality is really what I think gives this crew here a cutting edge, because we all nurture that side of what we're doing, both the creative aspect and how it logically makes sense, too. You know, because if it's working, we should be able to explain some part of it, right?
And also another element is that gravity's not constant. Did you know that? Like a whole group of scientists came around and they were like measuring gravity's pull,
yeah.
And it's different from year to year, almost moment to moment. And so instead of acknowledging that gravity's not a constant, they just work out an average and say that's gravity, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Although it keeps changing, it's stupid.
Yeah, because that's one of the things, and this is one of the reasons why I can't wait for our associate Matt Pulver to start having discussions about math and the esoteric aspect of it, because, you know, we have discussions about this, and even other speakers like David Sreda talk about how all measurements are arbitrary. So it's not really, like, as solid, quote-unquote, of math as people think. And that's why I love, you know, like I said, our staff mathematician, because he knows this. And so we recognize that we're setting arbitrary parameters to create something to quantify. Mm. And so, yeah, how you're saying the fluctuations in gravity is an overall net yield from basically a dynamic system, which is the Earth. It's fluid. It's moving. So all these different elements that are kind of churning inside of it create, you know, fluctuating EM fields. And the simple fact that we're spinning around something else, you know, kind of moves those around too. So, yeah, it's we have a basic general understanding, and the fun thing is that, you know, the calculations that we do use, you know, are fairly accurate. And so it's like the millisecond might be off, but that's the cool thing about it. You can at least get to a millisecond or something, you know. So then that's where the quantum aspect comes in, and then you're saying, well, what varied in that millisecond? You know, what really happened there? And that's one of the things that intrigues all of us here. We love understanding the fundamentals of reality and why there's these seeming limitations that continually get broken. I mean, we weren't supposed to fly, but there's plenty of planes in the air now, right? Almost too many. So,
yeah. On top of that, almost everybody who makes these great discoveries that changes what people think is possible wind up becoming legends, but yeah. Never legends in their own time.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, really? But, really? And at least, I don't think that the appreciation for scientific discovery has become a marketing tool rather than a tool for expanding one's minds. Much in the same way that electronics and digital technology has massively increased the collective knowledge of the United States or any country, indeed the world, just having access to this kind of information, just for example, with Google. The problem is, and I saw this interesting phenomenon, let's say, with cell phones and numbers. How many people before cell phones could remember many, many people's phone numbers, home phone numbers off the top of their head? Virtually everybody could, right? How many can do so today? Most people don't even remember their own number. They get it all written down for you. So technology is this double-edged sword, I think, where you can either use it to expand and strengthen the mind or to replace it completely so that you don't even have one anymore.
Yeah, I think that you know, there's a lot of us out there looking for a symbiotic balance, really. Because it's possible, and I think that's one, how I mentioned earlier, I'm very much into intuitive discipline application. And myself, I've seen, I've checked my email, you can say in a clairvoyant state. My associates have done that. We've trained the people to do it. But we're not putting Google glasses on, and we're definitely not getting a microchip put into us, but we can still talk to the computer. So there's ways that we can naturally integrate with things. And I think that that's part of our evolution as a planet. I think that there is an inevitable sort of communication point that we're going to have to integrate with machines. And it's not going to require clunky implants. It's just going to supply our minds, just focusing it and knowing how. Because how we have mentioned the scalar wave aspect, that's our brains, that's what they're doing. They're creating scalar interference patterns constantly, nonstop. And that seems to attribute to the synchronization, you can say, of what makes us think we're inhabiting a physical reality. Because I'm sure you've ran into this, Vinny, and I'm sure many of your listeners have, to where there's so much space in between every single one of our atoms, it's like we're not even sure why we don't just pass through each other. This is kind of a strange phenomenon on that quantum level. And so that's some of the things that we examine, really.
Well, some people have used those discoveries about how simply your mind can actually change chemical compositions the structure of matter around you and actually control its function to a degree. They've used that as a justification for thinking that one human mind makes up absolutely everything and that nothing really exists and we're all just making it up. As if my human consciousness somehow cancels out all the other 7 billion odd consciousnesses that are running right now. I'm creating it all. When somebody comes up to me that's angry or something like that, it's because I'm actually really angry in part, and I'm just interpreting something that I came up with. You know, it's like this selfish insanity kind of thing. Like I'm God and I create everything. That's what it is. It's thinking you're God, is thinking you can create everything and that you can bend all reality to your will. Whereas I interpret these experiments and discoveries slightly differently. I think that it makes me, and by extension, the entire human race, into psychic antennas that are capable of manipulating microscopically some of the matter around us, that are capable of influencing the flow of time and many other aspects of our reality. Those aspects of reality are there, and they're there for everybody, right? They're the base premise. It means that we can change them if we try hard enough, but it doesn't mean we create it all ourselves. It doesn't mean we can, manifest and just change a cow into a horse in front of us or something magical or whatever. It's like micro changes in reality. And I think if everybody's capable of making their own micro changes in reality, then we can make the reality that we want collectively.
Yeah, and I think that how you mentioned about the Messiah complex, you can say that some people get when they experience this, I think this is them discovering their own power. And it's okay, everyone, because we all are fragments of the divine, all everything, unified field, whatever you want to call it. So we do have the power, in a sense, to do some profound things. But like you were mentioning, it's not like one person's will just imposes on everyone else's reality. One of the movies actually I point people to is to give examples of this. It's really a multiverse equation. And Men in Black 3 actually broach upon this. And for those who've seen it, they might remember one scene where essentially the K was leaving a tip, didn't leave a tip, which concerned the character you can see in the multiverse. And when he ran back and put the tip on the table, the meteor on the out that was going to hit the Earth just blew up. And so it's not the fact that the tip was left that made that meteor blow up. It's the synchronization to the reality which lowered the probability of that happening. So in that reality, basically the fact that he left the tip is more, it's closer to the reality where the asteroid didn't hit.
Which means that we live in a probabilistic reality where anything is possible, unlike a cannibalistic reality where anyone is edible.
Yeah, that's true enough. Yeah, and that's one of the things where how you're saying changing a horse into a cow, I mean, it might work. Maybe someone can create that synchronization, but it's not because they're powerful. I mean, that's one of the things when I do workshops, say, in lucid dreaming or even intuitive applications like remote viewing, I tell people it's not the viewer who's doing it. It's like it's an agreement between the awareness involved in this experience. So it's not, we're just a conduit sometimes.
Yeah.
So and that's like an honor.
This brings me to like another discovery is that matter has a consciousness.
Oh yeah. It has intelligence, has information. And that's one of the things that it's great in a sense for people like us too, where the Higgs boson experiment with the Big Hadron Collider, you know, they had to acknowledge what they called an information vector, which essentially proved to a degree the existence of something called the scalar field or information field. And so because there is inherent information in the structure it's a connotation of intelligence, absolutely, because it's going to want to act as itself, not something else, which shows that there's a certain degree of choice there one way or another. So yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, because if you're observing the tiny particles and what have you, just the fact that you're observing them actually makes them behave differently.
Yeah, absolutely.
It means that doing an experiment on them can be very, very interesting and yield wildly different results depending on who's doing the experiment. It's kind of like if you have a biased Monsanto approval board or something like that at the FDA that has this particular perception of how this crop grows and doesn't cause huge tumors in rats and what have you, and they approve it, and it goes on through. Oh, that's great, but it's not frickin' reality.
Yeah, it's true. And this is where a lot of people have seen this kind of stuff demonstrated in a sense with what they call placebo effect or the nocebo effect. But everyone tries, in popular media and medical science, they want people just to disregard that as a fluke. But statistically, it's becoming more and more difficult for these drugs to beat a placebo. So what's that saying? That's saying exactly what we're talking about here, is that our minds, and especially what you were saying, Vinny, on a micro level, it's almost easier. And my personal theory on that has to do with exactly what we're talking about, the observer effect. Like, it's hard, like we're only ones in a lot of ways who are observing the internal changes of our body. So in a lot of ways, it's kind of easier on a quantum level because you're only dealing with, like, in a sense, a limited amount of observation to interfere with that sort of electron spin, like we've seen in double slit experiments and things like that. As opposed to like that cow into a horse. I mean, it's kind of even the fact that we're saying everything has its own awareness. You know, the grass that cow was standing on was pretty much aware that there was a cow there. I mean, I recognize that to some degree.
Yeah. Oh no, it's a cow.
Exactly. So it's a Holocaust to them when the cows come by. This does get into the observer effect, in which you can kind of say also relates to the entanglement principles that are being observed. And when we use those terms, I know that those usually has to do with specific experiments, and the vocabulary is kind of dicey for, you know, those who have earned their degrees out there listening to me say this. I understand that's a loose interpretation of entanglement principles, but statistically, from what we're observing, it's very similar. And when we have, say, when we get a picture from somebody who's having an issue medically, and we help them with our therapy to help, you know, the therapy that they're currently using with through their medical practitioners, and we see a positive response, you know, that maybe was going slower with their medication before, that's pretty interesting statistically. It's like, how did that happen? Especially if we're able to reproduce it, which we have been. That goes beyond just normal chance, you know, the 52% we like to kind of use. And I would say that our effect range is probably a good 70 to 85% on these things immediately. I mean, in terms of you can just kind of see it right away. And so it's really interesting stuff. And I think that, to me, what I'm observing in the mass culture, and even you can say the resistance put on certain technologies, you can see it lightening up for one reason or another, because they are too busy, or it works into some timeline projections already, I don't know. But we are seeing this because really it's not like a replacement system. It's actually, it's kind of like how you had mentioned too, the more we recognize what our common goals are and where we're agreeing, the more effective we are. And that works with this technology too. So it's not really in my interest as a manufacturer of this stuff to try to start competition. You know what I mean, because actually if we get products together of similar nature, they'd actually work better. And that's one of the things that we've observed in our tests using multiple, you know, items or sources of this information transfer. So we work that into our business model in the sense that we're not looking to put anyone out of business. We're actually just here to help. That's pretty much kind of how we look at things.
There was an experiment, I think, doing a, trucking, I think, and delivery of goods. And they had, I think, three different scenarios by which goods could be delivered. One, there would be a short road that's nice and flat and what have you, that has two gates, one on each end. In the first experiment, they gave one trucking company control over the front gate, and another one, the different company, had control of the front gate. So neither one of them could actually get through without the say-so of the other. And the alternative route was much longer and it took a lot more time. And the idea is to make as much money as you possibly can and do your runs in the shortest possible time. Now, the third experiment was when they shared control of the gates and they had, strangely enough, a hell of a lot more profit to be made by working together than competing against one another. And I think it's a very profound experiment to show how people actually work together better than if they are trying to sabotage each other and compete with one another a lot of the time. I mean, let's say, for instance, you had two inventors sitting in a room together trying to come up with the best invention they possibly could. They'd probably together come up with a much better invention than either one of them could come up with on their own, wouldn't they?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. That's one of the analogies I give is that, you know, the best pieces of art that we appreciate, like movies and music, weren't done by one person. They're usually, especially movies, they're done by, you know, hundreds, sometimes thousands of people. And those are the best products. They're not the ones that just one person just did all the filming, all the writing, all the, you know what I mean? It's just not how it's done.
Yeah. So if that's the case then here, there's some competition between you and Thunder Light team, and based on this hologram technology, could you explain what this holographic kind of scalar-ish infusion really is, like in terms of how it's constructed?
But to the best of my knowledge, I can. It is based off of what earlier incarnations and of the discipline called radionics. This is an evolution of that. And so what that does is it has to do specifically with interference patterns. And it's not just interference patterns using like electrical waves or sound waves or even light waves. It's a conglomerate that creates what I guess you can say is that information vector that we mentioned with some of the other experiments in modern academics, to imbue correlating waveforms with the desired effect. So in the sense of, say, a body, you know, like one of the tests we recently had done, which was great, one of the products that we're using right now is meant to help balance the bioelectrical field and conductivity aspect of the person who's wearing it. And there's different types of, I guess you can call them aura cameras, but essentially they're measuring the conductivity levels of your skin. And so we had seen with the application of our product, someone's brightness go up, in a sense that conductivity go up quite a bit. In terms of shade values, I would say it was a good 6 to 8 shade values brighter in some cases. So you could say that
out of a total, how many shades have they got there? You know, like more than Ray-Ban?
More than what? I'm sorry?
More than Ray-Ban or Dirty Dog? Because they sell shades?
Oh, I don't know, maybe. But I would say like it's in terms of like the overall brightness increase, we have to kind of look at that and do a pixel value.
Well, you know, like on Predator, how you can see people's heat and what have you,
yeah.
And different heat zones come up with different colors, like red, exactly, would be the hottest, or white would be the hottest, or something like that.
Yeah.
You're talking about going from light blue, which is the coldest, to like green, red, or purple, which is getting warmer.
Some, or it's kind of like with a lot of these, what it does is if the person's overall shade is like the orange or and the white or something like that, it's like kind of dim, and then it's like sort of turning the dimmer up, and so it just got brighter. So it might be a lighter shade of that color in a sense, but it's actually a it's showing the amplitude increase is what it's doing in terms of the measuring. So it's actually just getting lighter, brighter.
Is it showing an amplitude increase, or is it actually, I don't know, having a clarity, right? Kind of like if you've got the dial on your radio just a little bit off, you get that kind of static interference, and when you put the dial dead on, that's when it's ready to receive the signal properly.
That could very well be the case too, or both of them. You know, this is one of the things that we're looking to test more of, so we know for sure.
Like the disruption of signal interference, you know, like getting rid of interference.
Yeah,
that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, almost like a packet loss situation on the internet. Yeah, that could be very well be the case too. And I think that this is what we love tests. Like our crew loves doing tests. We have a lot of, you know, scientists, and I kind of jokingly refer to my friends and colleagues who have degrees as my pedigrees. So my pedigrees are all of our pedigree people are working on this because we love it. We love data. We love to verify what we're doing because we don't want to sell stuff that we're not confident in because we know those types of people and we just don't agree with that. Like when you make unsubstantiated claims, there's no data to back it up. You know, it's just not good. And unfortunately, I'm sure you've seen this too, Vinny, yourself in this community, how there's a lot of people just trying to make a buck off of people's hopes and fears. And it's just not cool.
I think people make the mistake of because you've left the corporate world, you've left the scumbaggery behind personally, that you don't bring any of that scumbaggery with you into this movement.
Oh yeah, and I think, and I see it all the time, a lot of, I mean, because we're lucky here in Southern California, it's probably one of the biggest conglomerates of holistic, metaphysical, conspiracy aware people. And so there's conventions, fairs here all the time. And so you see a lot of people who are new and just waking up to a lot of the facts, and you have to tell them, it's like, hey, this person seems like they got everything together, but they don't. Okay? So don't just take everything with a grain of salt. Always have your discernment meters on. Don't believe me, please, until you see me or my actions are backing up what I'm saying. it's Wild West, you know, in a lot of ways, very literally out here. So we have everything out here. We have the best of the best and some of the worst with the mega corporations too, with headquarters right here, you know, so it can be very strange in this neck of the woods. So, I don't mind sharing with your audience here. I mean, we've had, you know, mysterious explosions in our manufacturing place. At least one, at the very least, you could tell it was very strategic. And it wasn't, you know, any safety thing that wasn't observed on our part, as far as we know, and what we've been able to investigate. And it was weird how the authorities handled it, too. And so it was pretty obvious that someone was sending a message. And, yeah, we got the message. It's okay. You know, obviously, if they wanted to really stamp everyone out, they would. So it's not the situation.
Well, but I think they try to negotiate and warn you first before they assassinate you. So as soon as somebody actually starts to tell you, you know, stop doing what you're doing or we'll kill you or your family or something like that, then I think you can make a decision about when to stop. But if it's just suspicious and you're kind of like you don't really know or what have you, then, you know, you'll be right for now.
Yeah,
provided you watch your step.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the other thing. I grew up in Southern California, so I'm used to dealing with certain scoundrel elements. And I know that ultimately, if someone really wants to get you, they don't warn you. So that's the other thing. So if there's a warning, I'm concerned about being nice. And it's usually coming from someone lower down the rung of the ladder. Because right now, I mean, I know that there are some people that don't necessarily like what we're doing, but we're not going at it with a bad attitude. And I think that's ultimately what's keeping everyone alive and going forward here, as opposed to some of the other people that you do see, even in this industry, who are struggling constantly for years because they're going at it with a FU attitude to these people, and that's not going to get anywhere. You know, like how we're saying with, you know, in terms of working with what we agree on. Let's work with that. We can disagree all day, you know, but there are certain things we can agree on. I think that I can see in a sense why there was apprehension by certain powers that be, I guess you can say, to allow some of this technology out, or even Tesla's technology out, quite honestly, because, you know, you and I, Vinny, we're not going to weaponize some of these things, but other people, they are going to. And you can, as different.
I don't know. I might weaponize it, you know, it'd be fun.
Well, okay, yeah, you might, but I'm guessing that you're not going to try to vaporize your neighborhood. Some people might just do that. You know what I mean? Or they might.
If I had enough weed to vaporize out an entire neighborhood and the conventional I would have maybe emotional or moral issues before I did it, but I would do it.
Okay, I can see that situation. That's a little different, but that's cool. But I mean, that is a genuine concern, though, because I mean, that's why that they don't even let, you know, PS3s and PS4s and Xboxes go to certain countries, because they rip out those processors and try to use them to guide their little rockets and stuff. So you kind of got to watch out for that, especially as a manufacturer.
Yeah, that's right. PlayStation 3 is now the newest source of terrorist rocket launches worldwide.
I'm not saying everyone's using that, but I was saying theoretically, I'm sure some people are ripping out those processors and because they're powerful processors. I don't know if I was going to make some kind of weird device, and this is one of the things that I'm sure, Vinny, you probably have had contacts come to you too. They'll tell you that almost like every day some James Bond stuff goes on with some kind of supervillain too. It's not just like the dastardly people who are selfish and power hungry that you have to worry about, but then there's genuine psychopaths. You know what I mean? And they do these things. You know, and I've heard this from my contacts too, and it's like you can see it. I mean, we've met enough characters, I'm sure, in bars who if you gave them a nuclear bomb, they'd probably try to use it. You know what I mean?
I don't know if you find out some of the people like that in bars, but then again, nobody sells nuclear weapons in your average pub crawl, do they?
No, it's a hypothetical.
I had too many beers tonight. Can you hold my nuclear device for me? I need it to go to a safe place. You know?
I go to the keys, yeah, and the launch code folder.
Yeah, yeah, like James Bond had like 5 too many martinis that were shaken, not stirred.
Honestly, Vinny, some of the stories I've heard from people who I'm pretty sure are telling me the truth and I've had enough confirmation, I wouldn't doubt that that's happened. You'd be surprised. This is how I know there's divine guidance after some of the stories I've heard or divine intervention, because it's like we should have been vaporized I don't know how many times with some of the people who are in charge and doing some of these jobs.
Oh, yeah. These people are like drug addicts and like crazy people, isn't it? Look around you, the entire society. Just think about how messed up it is. And you can honestly tell me that completely crazy people aren't in control of things?
Well, I think
how would everything get so completely crazy if that wasn't the case? I don't understand. Nobody has the power to make things as nuts as they are.
Yeah, I guess some people just call themselves bold, but yeah, some. I think you do have to be a little crazy to do some of these jobs. I know I wouldn't want to do some. I mean, you know, like jumping through certain space things, or you know, oh yeah, portals. I mean, everyone talks about portals and stuff as happy fluffy things in a lot of the metaphysical realm, but they're not all happy fluffy. So just a weird reality.
You could get shredded the atoms from. You could shred the atoms from your bones, son, by stepping into the wrong one of those.
Yeah, exactly.
I was interviewing Andrew Bruchago, who's allegedly a member of Project Pegasus. You know, the chrononauts and teleportation experiments that they're doing in the late 70s, early 80s, I think. He teleported into a square from east coast to west coast, and there was a fountain, and one of his colleagues who jumped with him landed in the fountain, and you know how there was a layer of water over his ankles, right? And he stood there for just a second, and then he slid right off his ankles, right? His ankles were just left there in the pool, like something in the field of the water hadn't occurred properly with the jump, and so it tried to merge the water level with his ankles and cut them right off.
Yeah, I'd heard Andy's story. I've met Andy a couple times too, and interesting character. And there is apparently some very strange hardware out there. I mean, myself personally, I have a weird entanglement story with some of the military abduction phenomenon too, relating to projects out of Edwards Air Force Base. And
you worked on Edwards Air Force Base?
Personally, I've never, as far as I know, I've never consciously enlisted and walked in there, but I know that that base, because of what I thought were just dream experiences, but probably weren't. So I may have very well physically been there, but I never physically actually like enlisted or anything like that. I just know what could that you, base is.
Could you describe the experience?
Oh, yeah. For as long as I can remember, there had always been this sort of lab room in that dream realm I mentioned earlier as being a natural lucid dreamer. I just didn't know that you weren't supposed to be awake on that side. And so this lab room was always kind of strange to me, and it always led to very weird things and what I thought were just games. I thought I was playing games on the other side in that reality. But as time went on, I found out these games would actually correlate to a lot of the projects. And what confirmed that it was Edwards for me was when this one, you can say it's a bilocational experience, because I knew I was sleeping and I was in my bed. But I also knew I was inhabiting another body that wasn't necessarily mine. And I was watching, it was a test flight of a NASA space vehicle that was supposed to have flown in the 70s or something like that. And I was watching this thing being pulled out over there, and everyone kind of knew it was just a bunch of crap. And so they're like, hey, it's going fine. And as I'm walking in this experience, I'm going towards this tunnel. And I realized if I kept heading down this way, that I was going to reach that lab room. And so that next morning, essentially, when I woke up and I was looking at the news, there was that test flight out of Edwards, you know, things like that. I'm like, oh, okay, this is getting kind of weird now. And so that's when it really kind of dawned on me that this just wasn't my fantasy, you know, or like some weird, cool game, or, you know what I mean? It was just too many things started falling in place then, in terms of what I've heard from other people who've had these experiences or even enlisted and have been part of intelligence communities. Because a lot of things do relate to things like the trip chair and those kind of simulations like that. And as well as other, not just remote viewing programs, but also what's kind of known as remote influencing. That was a very large part of it. So, I mean, talking about this stuff actually got me in trouble for a while too, but at this point, it's like, it's all in posterity. I have other interviews about this. And a lot of more of it's coming out from other people. So, and
this reminds me a lot about what Donald Marshall was talking about the Vril Society and their cloning programs and psychic transportation of consciousness into clone bodies while the living person's asleep, like say in their apartment in LA or something like that. They're somehow capable of actually transporting that consciousness into a cloned body of you that they've got in an underground facility where they can have sex with you or get you to perform party tricks for them or something like that, like real sick stuff he was talking about. But it has some similarities with what you're just saying.
Yeah, honestly, it's the same kind of same story. He's one of the people that have seemingly seen something very similar to I have. Because, yeah, I don't know. I can't say I know for sure that these are clones and all this and that, but I can see how that could be applicable. And I can see, even just with the science that we're doing and multiverse weirdness, I can see how you can sort of like that movie Free Jack, when they pull this body from the past, and then it would be this dude, but it's not really him. He's technically died in his reality, but it's here's that body. So there's all that kind of weirdness. That doesn't even get into ET stuff, you know what I mean? Because then ET stuff just gets even more zany. Yeah, these programs are pretty weird, and because I know for myself, you know, I know there was definitely, I do remember, there was ritual stuff, there was a lot of weird training, there was a lot of just ugly things. But a lot of times, most of my time in that sort of environment was spent in the games, like fighting, like kind of controlling armies. I mean, it was that's like the movie that just came out, Ender's Game. I had read that book when I was a sophomore in high school, because the book's been out for a while, and it was like my catcher's in the rye. You know what I mean? I was like, I couldn't stop reading it. because it just sounded too familiar. I'm like, oh, wow, this is just too strange. Because I do remember what I called the game board, but it wasn't just like, oh, I'm fighting aliens in space. It's how does that relate through time in this reality, and how, what do we have to move over here to make that less probable in 30 years? And so it's, it wasn't just like what people say, like, oh, it's just blowing things up and this and that. No, it was hardcore multiverse calculations that, yes, you are immersed in, and yes, there is a sort of adventure aspect of it and all this other stuff, but ultimately it moves down, it comes down to like that proverbial tip on the table, like we're talking about with Men in Black 3. So it's not, I don't have this grand wild of a story because I just don't see myself that way, and I don't think, I honestly, I don't have, I've processed a lot of anger and a lot of stuff from that. Like, I don't have the violation feeling anymore and all that stuff because I see it. It made me good at what I'm doing now. What I'm doing now is helping a lot of people.
Well, so and in fact, that's another part, I think, that proves the point of the micro-influence of reality, because anybody can look at the reality of, say, abuse or neglect or something and appear that that will have a physical altercation, right? You'll have a permanent psychological disability for the rest of your life. Like, for me, it was working. Working gave me so much trauma that now when I go for a job interview, a proper job interview, I have a panic attack, right? I just physically can't do it. It has an actual effect on me. And so what's happening here, I think, is that if you've had these kind of transportations of consciousness or this violation sensation, as you were talking about it, just as I've managed to transmute my bad work history into a good working career where I can help a lot of people who've had the same kind of problems as I have, you've created a solution that can actually help others with the problems that you've got, yet neither of us, I think, will actually ever truly be able to forget or forgive or completely get over these things that have happened to us, nor would we want to, because it is the importance of those sensations that makes us do what we do and do it so well and actually feel that compassion for others that is necessary for them to get past their traumas, which we could not.
Yeah, definitely. And I know for myself, I can definitely forgive, but yeah, definitely not forgetting, because it's wise. It's wise to know the real pitfalls out there, because that's one of the things, I mean, I'm sure some of your listeners have looked into this and maybe some haven't, but you'd be surprised how frequency interaction is utilized by the powers that be, whatever you want to call it. That's why the Snowden thing was such a big deal, is he gave everyone a little glimpse into how they're able to tap into stuff. One of our colleagues, Jeff Harvey, been doing this kind of work for years and years and does well at it, one of the best. He was in the naval communications back in the day, and he was saying in the 70s, like, he knew how to basically tap into someone's power lines to hear what they're saying in the room. And so if you can tap into this, hear stuff from your power lines, you can also send stuff from your power lines. And so this gets into all other kinds of manipulation. And so let alone how to triangulate you and who you actually are. So this kind of the plausibility of something like myself and what Donald was saying about tuning into you in a sense of tapping into your awareness when you're in one place and going another, it actually becomes a lot more feasible when you start seeing everything as like a sine wave. If you duplicate that sine wave, you're duplicating part of that awareness, just like we've been talking about with the manipulation of matter in this technology, or with our minds on a micro level with chemicals. So it's the more kind of aspect.
Yeah. It reminds me of the shamanistic story about the wounded healer. Have you ever heard about this?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's kind of it, you know. You can't make what happened to you not happen, so you kind of just have to deal with it and get on with life, I guess. But usually it helps if you're not just getting on with life by yourself, you know, if you're actually part of something, if you're helping other people. I think my wife, I told her the other day, you know, she's like doing a gardening business and things, a bit of a downturn, real financial stress. We had a big fight and everything. And then we kind of realized why we were so upset. It's because we were just under stress and we weren't helping people while we were doing it. You know, I was kind of like depressed and stopped editing my shows. And she was kind of in the same situation as well, all because of this financial bleeding on us. And we both realize that, you know, actually we've both got innate talents to help people, and we can't help ourselves at the moment. So how about we help somebody else to make ourselves feel better?
Yeah, definitely. Share the wisdom and share the knowledge. And that's one of the things, part of the intuitive applications and discipline I've looked into is various traditional shamanic techniques. And, the aspect of the shaman being one of the common monikers that you hear in different cultures is that everything happened the way it was supposed to. So, man, it kind of embodies what you're talking about, like in relation to not being able to change what's happened to you, but recognizing what happened to you is what is giving you what you have now, and you can make, and the tools that you have now. And that's why it happened, because you've gotten better from it. So, you know.
Yeah. I mean, if anybody's put up a bridge or something, why would you put up a bridge that hasn't been strength tested? You know? It's dangerous, isn't it? And I think people avoid suffering. They avoid pain, hardship, and what have you. And they're really afraid of it, you know? I mean, sure, why wouldn't you be? But at the other end of the spectrum, there's something valuable there. If you hadn't have to suffer to obtain knowledge that you have, what value does that knowledge really have?
Fair enough. You know, and that kind of works about saying nothing worthwhile is easy. So, like you had mentioned, that, you know, not why would you build a bridge and not test it? And that's definitely something that we do here. We have a philosophy we agree with on a personal and professional level. You know, that's why I say we love testing everything we do. And we like, being clear with ourselves. Because I think that's the thing, especially with this technology, how we had mentioned the entanglement aspect. Is I'm sure that your listeners are getting an idea of who I am from my voice, you know, no matter what I'm saying. And you're seeing that if we're making it, that means, yeah, some aspect of myself is entangled with that project, as well as the rest of our associates. So we're aware of this. So we don't want to necessarily transfer any of our stuff to anyone else. And so we make sure we're in a particular mind frame and we're making our product. And we have different protocols in terms of technology to help assist that as well. Because we're not here just to make money. We're here to, like you said, do things better. You know, share some joy, share some knowledge. You know, help people out. You know, and so we can't really do that if we're not really, you know, working on ourselves first. You know what I mean? That just makes us hypocrites. So that's a huge part of what we're doing, and why I feel that we're effective at what we do. It's not so much just because we have, you know, fancy technology. The technology is awesome. I gladly say one of the machines that we use is the SC5 1000. It's an immaculate machine. But that machine is only as good as the operator. Kind of like if you bought an amazingly awesome guitar with, you know, expensive inlays, it doesn't matter if you can't play it. You know what I mean? So it's a similar kind of concept.
Yeah, and it's funny you should mention that. I mean, my mate Mikhail is my guitarist for our band, and we have another mate of ours' guitar. And it just can't tune. And the other guy's like a really terrible guitarist. We came up with this idea for a movie called Guitar Exorcist, that a guitar gets possessed by the bad playing habits of its previous owner, kind of thing. And it terrorizes a Christian Mexican family or something like that. Like it used to belong to some really terrible mariachi. Like he just never even tuned his instruments. And every now and again, coming out of the room, they just hear this really bad guitar sound. It's just like, what is that? It's awful. It sounds like it's coming from the pit of hell. And it was. It was a possessed guitar.
As well as you know, Vinny, that's gold. Okay. That's a golden idea. I think you should go with it.
Yeah. It would be classic, you know. I mean, casting would be interesting. I mean, who would you have to play the guitar Exorcist, you know? The power of Van Halen compels you! The power of Jack Van Black. Halen compels you!
Yeah, Jack Black.
Oh, yeah, well, I mean, he's kind of born for the role, actually, now that I think about it, because after the Pick of Destiny, Tenacious D and what have you, I think this is just a natural move.
Yeah, it's School of Rock, too. Right there.
Yeah, the career aspects are endless. All right, well, that wraps us up for the first hour, ladies and gentlemen. weird note there. And we'll be right back after the break at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com with my very special guest, Jerry Avalos, formerly of Alamos Labs, I'm just joking, by the way. We'll be right back after this.